As a young and idealistic 21-year-old, I spent a year in India working with my hero, Jandrez. This was the mid-90s. There were many idols to choose from. Nelson Mandela was universally worshipped. Even Bill Clinton had a following. Cool kids were building altars to Kurt Cobain, who had recently died by suicide. I suppose it says something about my social acumen that my hero was a pajama kurta-clad Belgian who had renounced worldly possessions and lived in a Delhi slum. I say he was my hero, not because he no longer is, but because he is no longer Belgian. He's the only European I know who has wanted and successfully obtained Indian citizenship. I'm Indian, but I think I can say without any self-loathing that only someone who is utterly committed to the cause would do that. He's often described as an economist activist. The oxymoron speaks for itself. In order to afford one square meal a day and avoid having to room with Jean in his busty, I got a day job at the World Bank's Delhi office. Bretton Woods institutions, for all their postmodern capitalist swagger, have a strangely missionary zeal in their quest to save the world's poor. Their employees, including my parents, who worked for the UN for decades, regularly go on mission to developing countries, and they say that with a completely straight face. In the first month I was there, we had our first mission from Washington, which, after a debriefing and reception in Delhi, was going to head to the field, a turn of phrase that rhymes with mission in all but rhyme. Over the last few decades, numerous Indian states and cities in the field have been rechristened, mostly because the British romped around the planet mispronouncing names, and then spelling them accordingly. I've spent a long time trying to decide whether their misspellings are a mark of A, carelessness, B, arrogance, or C, disrespect. My best guess is D, all of the above. Take the names of Indian indentured laborers to the Caribbean, for instance. V.S. Naipaul is clearly just an anglicization of Naipaul, because as his grandfather was being herded off the boat, the guy in the safari suit and solar topi at the bottom of the gangplank repeated, "Naipaul," when Grandpa said, "Naipaul," because Pal isn't a name and Paul is, and that just made more sense to write down in a name ledger. Correct answer, D. Another example. The surname of my best friend in university, also from Trinidad, is Sitaram. Sitaram is probably just careless, maybe a bit arrogant, but it borders on disrespect when you realize that the name should be Sita Ram, which is a verbal marriage of the couple from the Ramayana, a Hindu epic whose protagonists are the beautiful, blameless Princess Sita and the seventh avatar of the god Vishnu, Prince Ram. Again, it may have been deliberate, it probably was inadvertent, but my answer remains D. In India, some name changes just reflect better Latin spelling of the vernacular pronunciation. For example, Calcutta was not so much renamed as correctly spelled Kolkata, which is how you say it in Bengali. Others had more to do with tradition than British dysgraphia. Bombay was renamed Mumbai after a local deity, Mumba Devi. Chennai got its new name because although the East India Company founded the city of Madras, locals had always called it Chennaipatnam. The state of Orissa is now called Odisha, and as far as I can tell, this is because the letter R does not exist in the Oriya language. I don't speak Oriya myself, so this claim rests exclusively on the fact that the name of the language has also been changed to Odia. I rest my case. Many Odians also cannot pronounce the letter Z. It comes out like a J. So, for example, As anyone who has been to North India will attest, zero becomes jiro. Back to the World Bank's Delhi office. The mission arrived, comprising several middle-aged white men. They wore their self-imposed uniforms of half-sleeved white pressed shirts with undershirts peeking over the top, and khaki high-waist pants with pleats and the inexplicable ankle fold. First stop, debriefing from bank staff stationed, sometimes posted, never living in Delhi. Next stop, reception with local officials. At this reception, two of them were cornered by an exuberantly charming minister from the state formerly known as Orissa, where the mission was headed shortly. Both bank officials were economists of some standing, and both were religious, one Jewish and the other Mormon. The minister was extolling the virtues of his state, which is truly beautiful, but is still, to this day, described without injury or insult by the rest of the country as backward. He started with the golden beaches and quickly moved on to the temples. "Oh, the temples," he gushed. "So beautiful the architecture, so lovely the sculptures." Here he paused and sighed wistfully. "The breasts." He cupped an imaginary pair of coconuts in his hands. "Perfect. And the poses from above and below, standing and splitting. None of your missionary style." The Mormon economist's face flushed. I thought he might faint. But that would have been impolite, and besides, the minister wasn't quite done yet. "Bhubaneswar," he added informatively, "is the capital city. When you come, you must pay a visit to the Jew. Beautiful Jew." I caught my breath and looked anxiously at the second economist. His jaw had dropped and his skin had turned to chalk. It was only when the minister continued at some length to praise the mane of the lion and the stripes of the zebra that the color returned to his face.